WMRA News. I'm Bob Levicky. State police shoot a man to death after a chase in Amherst County. They say he had a violent felony record. A local Habitat for Humanity chapter and a solar energy nonprofit team up for a virtual workshop on the benefits of solar energy for Habitat homeowners and a solar barn raising. And in another local StoryCorps conversation, two sisters remember their mom, a legend in the craft world known as the Mouse House Lady. This is the WMRA Daily for Thursday, June 17. A state police trooper shot and killed a man near the Blue Ridge Parkway in Amherst County on Wednesday. The news leader reports police say the man had a violent felony history and was wanted by the Buckingham County Sheriff's Office. State police say they found the man, whose name was not released, in Waynesboro. He fled in a car and police pursued. After driving along the Blue Ridge Parkway, the man allegedly jumped out of his moving vehicle, which veered off the road and into a ditch. The troopers approached the man, shot, and killed him. State police claimed that he was armed with a gun. The news leader says it has not been able to independently verify the police account of the killing. The troopers involved are on administrative leave pending an investigation. A local Habitat for Humanity chapter and a solar energy nonprofit are teaming up on Friday for a virtual workshop on the benefits of solar energy for Habitat homeowners. Jeff High is the director of Give Solar.
I'm excited about Habitat for Humanity as both a national and international organization, taking a look at how they can implement renewable energy on their Habitat homes and make the homeowners financially better off through solar energy.
After the morning workshop, local volunteers will help install 24 solar panels on a Habitat duplex in Harrisonburg. Last year, Central Valley Habitat for Humanity teamed up with the nonprofit Give Solar to create a model for installing solar panels on newly built Habitat homes. You can learn more about the project and Friday's events through links at WMRA.org and on the app. As the coronavirus pandemic raged over the past year, Virginia prison officials released more than 2,100 inmates early to try to control the spread of the virus by reducing the prison population. The Department of Corrections says that practice will end on July 1st. In April last year, the General Assembly approved a proposed budget amendment from Governor Ralph Northam giving the director of the Department of Corrections authority to consider early release for inmates with less than 1 year left to serve on their sentences. Inmates convicted of a Class 1 felony or a sexually violent offense were not eligible. Some inmate advocates said the program did not reduce the prison population as significantly as they had hoped. There is a capacity crisis in mental health facilities in Virginia. 6 out of 8 state hospitals are 98% full. Virginia Public Radio's Jad Khalil reports.
The Department of Behavioral Health and Developmental Services has to treat more patients with less staff. Commissioner Allison Land updated the Senate Finance Committee on Wednesday.
And unfortunately, I will be giving you some information and saying some things that may not be easy to hear for the committee.
There were 1,000 staff vacancies before the pandemic, which puts patients and staff at an increased safety risk. Land says the vacancies have only grown to about 1,300 today.
We're really running 60 to 70% in the facilities.
Inappropriate admissions are putting pressure on the system, too. Many temporary detention orders are for elderly patients with dementia who end up being transported to mental health facilities since state code puts those patients under mental health care.
However, dementia is not a mental illness. We are not the best place to manage these patients.
The pressure on facilities draws on law enforcement resources. Patients are observed by law enforcement before and during transport to hospitals. In rural areas, that's a special concern. Land says she's extremely worried about the Children's Hospital in Stanton. It's running at 50% capacity now, and typically when children return to school, the demand surges. I'm Jad Khalil.
The nonprofit Virginia Environmental Justice Collaborative released a map this week detailing the environmental vulnerability of state residents. They partnered with an advocacy group in California. Patrick Larson with Partner Station VPM reports.
Adam Buchholz heads up mapping for environmental justice. MEJ designed the new map of Virginia, which represents people's vulnerability and exposure to pollution in each of the state's census tracts. Buchholz says the map backs up the work of state and local advocates.
They've been saying it for a really long time. And so what these maps can do is they can create a bridge between environmental justice advocates and policymakers. These maps are based on the premise that the impact of pollution is a product of both the vulnerability to pollution and exposure to it.
The map comes as Virginia is implementing its 2020 Environmental Justice Act. Renee Hoyos, director of the state's new EJ office, agrees that the map gets people's attention and helps them visualize environmental disparities.
Patrick Larson reporting. The federal government is about to spend millions of dollars to rescue schools in Virginia. Virginia Public Radio's Michael Pope reports on how the money will be spent.
Virginia is about to receive more than $4 billion from the American Rescue Plan to help recover from the pandemic. Chad Stewart at the Commonwealth Institute says state leaders should consider investing that money in education for things like wraparound services that are offered at local community schools.
This can look like additional food assistance, assistance signing up for broadband services, after-school programs. Schools can become hubs for health services such as mental and behavioral and physical health. And all that access makes a big difference to student outcomes.
That's one of the recommendations from the Fund Our Schools Coalition. Rachel Dean at the Legal Aid Justice Center says another recommendation is for an equity fund.
Our coalition has recommended that the General Assembly create this fund for the next several fiscal years and then allow school divisions to draw down that money to serve some of their most under-resourced and low-income students.
Lawmakers are expected to come back to Richmond later this summer for a special session to figure out how to spend that $4 billion. And they'll be hearing from many interest groups with a variety of funding requests. Michael Pope.
Last week, Michael Paul Williams, longtime columnist for the Richmond Times-Dispatch, was awarded the Pulitzer Prize, the highest honor in journalism. The Pulitzer Board gave Williams the award for, quote, his penetrating and insightful columns that led Richmond, a former capital of the Confederacy, through the painful and complicated process of dismantling the city's monuments to white supremacy.
I've been ranting and railing against Confederate monuments for the better part of the last 5 years before it seemed like the world suddenly became utterly committed to taking them down, or at least, you know, Richmond did.
Williams said he was in a, quote, place of gratitude after winning journalism's highest honor. Finally today, as part of WMRA's partnership with StoryCorps, we are sharing a conversation between two sisters, Amy Voss DeVito and Beverly Harrison, remembering their mom. She was a star in the craft world, in particular because of her Mouse House creations.
So we're talking today about mom and mom's, what, amazing artistic endeavors and how it was that we grew up with that, right?
Right, right.
I would say one of my earliest memories is just how mom's crafts, the mouse dolls that were felt dolls, very simple, but that she had somehow crafted from a design, sort of took over our lives from early childhood until I think I was a teenager, and we went to the craft show out where near where we live, the Harper's Ferry craft show.
Mountain Heritage Craft Show. Right.
Mom was so popular, and it was the 70s, that people would crowd 4 and 5 people deep around her booth. And it would get so hot that I remember mom would send me under the table and tell me to lie on the ground because a breeze could come through people's ankles.
Right. Mom was worried about Beverly having heat stroke.
Which I did. We passed out numbers when people were waiting outside in line. And so you had a number and you would get called to mom's booth.
And you were allowed to buy one doll.
Because
people would come in and wipe out her inventory.
And it was our father who had the idea of having a big Whitman sampler. And so he would go through the line and pass out people's numbers and give them candy and try and keep everybody calm because people got hot under the collar when they were, you know, and you could only have 2 or 3 people with mom's table deciding because they might want the same doll. And more than once, mom had to referee people.
And what they looked like, they started out shorter. They grew a little over the years, but they were about 6 inches high. They were a felt stuffed doll to look like a mouse standing up. And it had always had a white mob cap with this tiny, perfect little satin bow at the back that she tied.
Somehow, because she had big, kind of chunky fingers, but she'd make
these
teeny tiny
things.
She could do these
incredible little tiny miniature crafts. And then it would have this little wool dress with a white collar and a white felt apron. And the white felt apron always had this little minute pocket that was holding a tiny little pair of scissors or this little tiny gold safety pin. And in these little felt arms, she put a million props.
Yes.
And that was, I think, the part she enjoyed the most.
That was the best
making
part.
The props. And before a show, it would take her all year,
yes,
to make several hundred of them. And then she'd sell out in 3 days. And before every craft show, she would get every blessed one of them out to look at them. And you'd have swarms. You'd have armies of these mobbed cap dolls when you were a little kid marching over the dining room table or the buffet or on the top of
yes,
the piano.
And the freezer.
And the freezer. At one point, we were so hard pressed for space storage that she defrosted our downstairs full size freezer, emptied it out, and we stored dolls in it. And it was so freaky to open the door and think you were going to get ice cream and see something like 75 dolls staring
at
you.
And I have to say, the other thing about Mom that was fascinating was how she took this whole doll set thing and the craft shows, and it was became such an integral part of our life because, mm-hmm, like, I had...
It was a lifestyle.
It was. And we were craft
great.
Show kids. It was great. We get to go out.
They
had
so much
like,
fun. You know, we would walk around, and we would find the other really popular crafters that had people standing around. And a
yes,
mom...
it was like being the child of a rock star.
It was.
But
there
a craft show.
There was craft show rock star status.
And we had it. But Mom taught us a lot of things through the craft shows. Like, we learned how to make change. Amy was not about math, so Amy was not allowed to make change and handle money. She
packed a
things.
Lot of dolls and was nice to people.
And
that was my job.
Even though I was 4 years younger, I got to handle the money and make the change and do the math because that wasn't Amy's thing. And it was amazing. And she taught us all about customer service.
And
patience and just putting on this delightful demeanor of warm and welcome.
Mm-hmm.
And it was wonderful.
Anyway, thanks for listening to us.
And letting us share this.
And honor our mother and her fearless creativity.
So look for Ellen Voss. It's spelled
E-L-L-Y-N because it was short for Llewellyn. Ellen Voss. Ellen Voss dolls.
And the Mouse House. People knew it as the Mouse House or the Mouse Lady. And our father, because he was a graphic designer, graphic artist, he painted a sign that said the Mouse House. And I got that from Mom and Dad's house. And so that is over my inside front door. So I have the Mouse House in my house now.
Yeah.
It's pretty awesome.
It's awesome. Ellen Voss dolls rock on.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing.
Thank you so much.
Amy Voss DeVito and Beverly Harrison remembering their mother, Ellen Voss, and the crafts she created. You can see a picture of the Mouse House craft booth and learn more about StoryCorps in the Valley at WMRA.org. For WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicky. Thanks for listening. Stay safely connected and enjoy your Thursday.